Hello, listeners. Thank you for tuning in to Iris today. This is the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Friday, the first day of December. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Let's take a look at the weather forecast from KCRG. Watching for slick road potential as rain and snow move through. Precipitation is possible in parts of the area on Friday, likely falling in a couple of rounds throughout the day. A wintry weather advisory remains in effect until noon for parts of the area, generally our counties south of U.S. Highway 30, with a couple of exceptions. Areas of rain are shifting through the Midwest ahead of an area of low pressure entering southeast Iowa this morning. This precipitation is pushing into some drier air, causing slow progress of the rain and a sharp northern edge to where it is falling. It's also moving into a generally cooler air mass, which could introduce the potential for mixed precipitation as we go through the morning hours. This could likely take the form of rain or snow, though an isolated patch or two of freezing rain for a brief period cannot be ruled out. A couple of things are working in our favor to avoid widespread wintry issues so far today. First, temperatures are running a little warmer than anticipated, which means more of southeast Iowa will see just plain rain. In addition, the drier air mentioned above is cutting into the northward extent of any precipitation. Areas from along and northwest of a line from Grinnell to Cedar Rapids to Dubuque may have trouble coming by much rain or snow at all as a result, with none expected in most of our northern zones. Still, the risk for some slick roadways in portions of the area is there this morning, so please use caution if you see wintry precipitation falling. Pay attention to the air temperature in your particular area. If it is near or below 32 degrees, anticipate the potential for some slippery roads. If it is above that range and you see liquid rain falling, then the concern will be less. A relative lull in precipitation chances is likely for a good portion of the afternoon before a second round of some rain or snow could move in this evening. This round also carries the potential for some light snow accumulations where conditions are cold enough, which poses the threat to cause some slick roads. If you have evening plans tonight, I wouldn't cancel them, but consider giving yourself a little extra time to get to them. Between these two rounds, there's still the potential for some snow accumulation. Additional chances for some rain or snow will continue into the weekend. The first comes in the form of a little bit of a light drizzle or flurry activity on Saturday, but impacts from this should be very minimal. Another round of some light rain or snow appears possible by Saturday night into early Sunday. While amounts here will also be on the lighter side, this is a time period where a few slick roads may develop where the snow falls. This event may favor the northern viewing area, but a bit more than the south. Similar to today, don't cancel plans, but put the potential for a longer drive into your plans. Next week, things generally look quieter, but a little bit of rain-snow mix moves through on Monday night for parts of our area. Otherwise, expect dry conditions with temperatures near or just above normal for this time of year for the first half of next week. Later in the week, warmer air moves into the viewing area and pushes high temperatures into the upper 40s to low 50s. Now let's read stories from the front page of the Courier. Senator Grassley tells House GOP, "Don't hold out for perfect on border talks." This story was filed by Tom Barton of the Gazette Lee Des Moines Bureau. Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley on Wednesday called out House Republicans who have been vocal in opposition to any potential proposal that emerges from the Senate over talks to cut a bipartisan deal on border security that is key to unlocking aid for Ukraine and Israel. Republicans and Democrats remain at odds on a potential agreement, and Senate Republican negotiators have expressed doubts that they can secure a deal that House Speaker Mike Johnson could bring to the House floor and be a palatable enough among conservatives to pass. House Republicans are insisting on wholesale changes to U.S. border and immigration policies. Democratic leaders say they are open to the border talks, but also warned Republicans about taking too hard a line. Quote, "All I can say is every Republican in the House of Representatives, as almost every Republican in the Senate, has been complaining for the last 3 years under this administration about the increase in illegal crossings and the migrant crisis at the U.S.-Mexico border," Grassley told reporters Wednesday during a conference call. Quote, "And if you're going to hold out for perfect, we're not going to get anything done, and you're going to have another 2 or 3 million people coming across this border in the last year of this presidency," Grassley said. Quote, "I think it's no doubt Democrats seem to recognize that we need real border security to be part of this package. And if we got such a thing in this package, I would hope House Republicans would say this is about the best we can do," unquote. Grassley stressed Senate GOP negotiators, quote, "are turning down every Democrat proposal that we would call window dressing. We've got to have something strong," he said. House and Senate Republicans have made clear that they will not support additional aid for Ukraine unless it is paired with border security measures to help manage the influx of migrants at the U.S.-Mexico border. Republicans hope that Democrats will feel political pressure to accept some of their border proposals after illegal crossings topped a daily average of more than 8,000 earlier this fall. President Joe Biden, who is running for re-election next year, has faced pressure, including from fellow Democrats, over the migrant flow. The Biden administration is asking Congress for $106 billion in emergency funding that includes aid for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, along with $14 billion to bolster the immigration system and border security. Money would go toward hiring more Border Patrol agents, immigration judges, and asylum officers. Republicans have proposed changing the asylum system for migrants by requiring asylum seekers to prove in initial interviews that they have a credible fear of political, religious, or racial persecution in their home country before advancing toward asylum in the United States. The group, though, has reached an impasse over how to deal with the humanitarian parole system that the Biden administration and others have used in urgent situations to allow certain migrants into the United States on a temporary basis, including to admit Afghans after the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan and Ukrainians following Russia's invasion. Grassley also shrugged off former President Donald Trump's latest push to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, a move which failed on the Senate floor in 2017. Trump, the current Republican presidential frontrunner, posted on his social media platform, Truth Social, over the weekend that he's, quote, "seriously looking at alternatives to replace the health care law if he wins a second term." The former president said the failure to repeal the health law 6 years ago while he was in office was, quote, "a low point for the Republican Party." Grassley and Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Joni Ernst were among 49 Republicans to vote for a controversial skinny repeal bill in July 2017 as they continued trying to change former President Barack Obama's signature health care law. A 51-vote majority killed the bill. Grassley said Republicans are working to bring health care costs down, but have little interest in rehashing the fight to repeal and replace the health care law, which has proved increasingly popular for its consumer protections to bar insurers from turning away or charging higher prices for people with pre-existing conditions, and policies enabling young people to stay on a parent's insurance plan until age 26. Quote, I have not been in any discussions about eliminating Obamacare since 2017, or 2018 at the latest, Grassley said. Quote, but I hear an awful lot of Republicans talking about health care, and it would be nice to have Trump tune in on some of this stuff, unquote. He and others in the Senate have introduced bipartisan legislation aimed at reining in health insurance costs, lowering prescription drug prices, and providing transparency in drug pricing. Next, we have a story from Caleb McCullough. Top publisher and authors sue over Iowa school library book ban law. Penguin Random House, the Iowa State Education Association, and some best-selling authors are suing the state of Iowa over a law that bans books with sexual content from public school libraries, arguing the law violates First Amendment free speech rights. The publishing giant filed the lawsuit in federal court on Thursday, naming Iowa State Board of Education President John Robbins, Iowa State Department of Education Director Mackenzie Snow, and a number of local school districts and officials as defendants. Best-selling authors including John Green, Jody Picoult, and Melinda Lowe are named as plaintiffs in the lawsuit. An anonymous high school student and their parent, along with three teachers, joined the lawsuit. The lawsuit argues that the restrictions on books imposed by Senate File 496 are overbroad and an unconstitutional restriction on speech and the right to receive information. The law, passed by Republican lawmakers this year and signed into law by our Governor Kim Reynolds, prohibits books that include descriptions or depictions of any of a list of defined sex acts from public school libraries. The law includes several other provisions, including a ban on teaching about gender and sexuality before seventh grade, and a requirement that schools inform parents if a student asks to be referred to by a different name or set of gender pronouns, and other requirements intended to expand transparency at public schools. It is the second lawsuit against the law filed this week. Iowa Safe Schools, an LGBTQ advocacy organization, along with the American Civil Liberties Union of Iowa, filed a separate lawsuit challenging the law on Tuesday. The new lawsuit seeks to strike down only the portion of the law that restricts books in school libraries, while the ACLU lawsuit seeks to strike down the entire law. The lawsuit argues the age-appropriate prohibition on descriptions or depictions of sex acts goes beyond prohibiting obscene or pornographic books, saying it is an overbroad prohibition that violates students' First Amendment right to receive information. Quote, government authorities cannot violate the First Amendment right to free speech by pretending that school grounds are constitutional no-fly zones, said Dan Novak, Vice President and Associate General Counsel at Penguin Random House, in a press conference on Thursday. Penguin Random House has been involved in litigation over book banning legislation in other states, including a lawsuit against the school district in Florida over removal of library books. Novak said there is a distinction between a school's curriculum and its library, which has traditionally been a place where students could freely access information regardless of its content. He argued removing a book based solely on the presence of a sex act or LGBTQ themes circumvents existing obscenity laws and should not be the role of the state government. Quote, sex, race, politics, no idea can be banned by government authorities, he said. There is a universal position here that applies with equal force, unquote. The lawsuit also argues the law violates the Due Process Clause of the Constitution by being too vague to be properly followed. It points to the term, quote, description in the law as not providing enough guidance about what statements would violate the law. Iowa Republican lawmakers have defended the law as a measure to prohibit pornographic books from public schools. But in implementing the law, some school districts have removed classic books, such as George Orwell's 1984 and Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse-Five. Quote, "The sexualization of children in schools does not have a place in Iowa," Republican Iowa House Speaker Pat Grassley said in a statement. Quote, "This is a responsible and reasonable law that I believe all Iowans could get behind if the far left and the media would stop playing politics and accurately represent what is actually in the law," unquote. A spokesperson for our governor, Kim Reynolds, pointed to an earlier statement in response to the ACLU lawsuit against the law, in which she said the law's goals, quote, "shouldn't be controversial," unquote. Quote, "The real controversy is that it exists in elementary schools," she said. "Books with graphic depictions of sex acts have absolutely no place in our schools," unquote. Republican Senate Majority Leader said in an emailed statement that Senate Republicans, quote, "will continue to advance policies to empower parents so Iowa students receive the best education in the country," unquote. The Iowa Board of Education has proposed rules for implementing the law, though school officials have said they do not clear up all the ambiguities and confusion school districts are facing. What do authors say about the law? Lori Halsey Anderson and Melinda Lowe, two of the authors who joined the lawsuit, said during Thursday's press conference the law prevented students from reading their books and exploring perspectives they may identify with. Anderson's 1999 award-winning novel, Speak, which centers on a 13-year-old who is raped at a party and her struggle to talk about the experience, has been removed from some Iowa schools because of the law. She said the law limits the ability of students to learn about important topics like sexual assault. Quote, "When confronted with challenging topics like sexual violence, some people prefer to stick their heads in the sand," she said. "That makes children vulnerable to predators, and it ensures that other generation of adults will grow up to become predators. Literature has the power to open hearts, fuel souls, and promote growth and understanding," unquote. Lowe's 2021 novel, Last Night at the Telegraph Club, which has been removed from some Iowa school districts, details a Chinese-American teenager who realizes she is queer. Lowe said the law serves to stigmatize LGBTQ identities by limiting access to materials about them. Quote, "Seeing yourself in a book can be transformative and empowering experience, one that I rarely had when I was growing up," she said. "This is why I write about queer and Asian American characters," unquote. Senator Rand Paul performed the Heimlich maneuver on a choking Senator Joni Ernst during a GOP lunch. Dateline Washington. Senator Joni Ernst, a Republican from Iowa, was choking on food during a luncheon Thursday when fellow Republican Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky performed the Heimlich maneuver on her. The incident occurred during a closed-door Republican lunch in the Capitol. Shortly after, Ernst posted on X, the platform formerly known as Twitter, to thank Paul. Ernst joked that she was choking on, quote, "woke policies," unquote. She was seen walking in the Capitol after the incident, and senators said they were grateful Paul was ready to help her. The Kentucky senator formerly worked as an eye doctor. Quote, "It's a good thing he did," said Senator Lindsey Graham. "God bless Rand Paul," unquote. Waverly Shell Rock alum hopes to turn elementary school into a community art center. This story filed by Maria Cooper. Dateline Waverly. With the future of a soon-to-be vacant elementary school unclear, a Waverly Shell Rock alum hopes to turn the building into a community art center. It's a decade-long dream for Matt Hibbard, who graduated from Waverly Shell Rock High School in 1992. He hopes to make it reality at West Cedar Elementary, located at 221 15th Street Northwest. He dreams of a space where people can participate in programs such as painting, pottery, fiber arts, music recording, and cooking, and using the building for live performances and an art gallery. In his vision, he imagines the gym cafeteria becoming a performance hall, the media center turning into an art gallery, the classrooms becoming a community meeting room, green room for performers, an apartment for an artist in residence, and places to teach different art forms. He also envisions renting out a space for a dance instructor and turning the current offices into a home for local arts-related nonprofits. The request for proposals for the sale and disposal of West Cedar and Margaretta Carey Elementary Schools closed Thursday. During the process, prospective buyers submitted bids and plans for use. West Cedar and Carey will close at the end of the school year, and next fall students will attend either Prairie West Elementary School at 2915 Fifth Avenue Northwest or Northridge Elementary School at 2513 Horton Road. Shell Rock Elementary School students are currently at Northridge while their building gets renovated. Students from Southeast Elementary School also will attend one of the two new schools, but that building will remain open in the event of student overflow or preschool demands because it is air-conditioned. The idea first came to Hibbard when the school district sold the old junior high at 215 3rd Street Northwest in 2012. Quote, "I didn't do anything with that proposal because I didn't think it was feasible at the time," he said at a public meeting debuting his ideas on Monday. "So I just kind of let it go. But I've always kind of kicked myself for not trying to do it," unquote. This time, Hibbard brought in Melissa Barber, a marketing specialist in Cedar Valley, whose children attend Waverly Shell Rock Schools, to conduct a feasibility study. Barber said she sent a survey to area teachers, art instructors, and musicians on their opinion about the proposed center. She said the response was overwhelmingly positive. Quote, "You can take the idea beyond just somebody standing on the stage to that community building that's kind of interactive," she said. "I think it's going to speak to a very wide audience, which is what you're going to need. You're going to need a wide base of community support," unquote. She's in favor of the project because she believes Waverly has many sports and athletic opportunities for both children and adults, but it's lacking in the arts. Quote, "If you put that together with the library, you've got a whole arts campus just tailor-made," she said. Hibbard said he is taking the approach the winning bidder for the junior high did in 2012 by submitting a bid for $5,000. He admits the price is low, but believes the Board of Education will look past the dollar amount and instead focus on the future use of the building. Quote, "We're trying to balance acquiring the building on terms that will be realistic for a new organization, while showing that we are serious by submitting a bid with at least some dollar amount attached to it, other than just, you know, $1, he said. So far, Hibbard and Barber are the only people working with the project, but if the bid is awarded, Hibbard would move forward with creating a nonprofit organization. A handful of people at the public meeting and through the feasibility study said they would be ready to step up to the plate if Hibbard wins the bid. Barber said the support they've received so far will hopefully spur more enthusiasm on the school board to award the bid to them. If Hibbard receives the building, he said there would not be any major renovations. The first step would be to install air conditioning throughout the entire school and to have a building inspector check the facility's safety, especially as it relates to asbestos. If all goes well, we would hope to repaint walls, replace lighting, and install sound-absorbing material for the future performance area. As for money that could come in, Hibbard is expecting income from people renting out rooms for classes, artists displaying art in the gallery, and for any organizations wishing to hold a performance or gathering. Some programs or classes could also cost money, but Hibbard wants to balance the amount of free and paid programming. An area grandmother attending the meeting was excited about the idea, saying she hauls her grandkids all over for art opportunities, which are in high demand across the community. Quote, "The Hearst Center in Cedar Falls charges, and their classes are booked. I mean, you have to sign up," she said. "You have to be a member and be on the friends list and sign up right away to even get into those classes," unquote. Sitting next to that woman was Steve Palmquist, a longtime theater and speech teacher who was part of Waverly Theater Organization in the 1980s. Quote, "I think there's a hunger for community theater right now," he said. He also noted that Charles City and Grinnell have their own art centers in their former Carnegie libraries. Hibbard noted there is support from community leaders as well. He said the Waverly Public Library would be open to partnering with the center, and that Travis Tolliver, the executive director of the Waverly Chamber of Commerce, signed a letter of support for the project. Hibbard also talked to a bank that said the project would be feasible. Hibbard is not an investor or developer. He lives in North Liberty and works for the City of Coralville's Parks and Recreation Department, which includes programming for a performing arts center as well as art and cooking classes. However, he thinks he brings a unique perspective to spearheading a project. Quote, "I'm just somebody who grew up in Waverly," he said. "Even though I don't currently live here, I still love my hometown. And I really feel like this would benefit the community a lot." Cedar Valley United Way investment applications to soon become available. Dateline Waterloo. Applications for the 2024-2026 Cedar Valley United Way Strategic and Emergency and Basic Needs Investments will become available at cedarvalleyunitedway.org beginning on December 13th. Informational sessions will be held for applicants at Cedar Valley United Way. They're located at 425 Cedar Street from 1:30 to 3:30 p.m. on December 13th, from 10 a.m. to noon on the 15th of December, and 1:30 to 3:30 p.m. on December 19th. Each session will cover the same material, so it is not necessary to attend all three. RSVP to Nelvia Reyes Rodriguez, Director of Community Impact and Engagement at nilviarr@cvuw.org, or by telephone at area code 319-235-6211, extension 18. Space is limited to two representatives from each agency. Applications are due by 4 p.m. on February 16th. Recipients will be notified the week of May 22nd, and investments will begin on July 1st. In 2022, Cedar Valley United Way awarded more than $1.6 million in grant funding to local organizations. To be considered for these grants, programs must meet the criteria. And those are, the program must focus on one of the key funding areas, education, health, financial stability, emergency and basic needs. Programs seeking to partner with Cedar Valley United Way must be a 501c3 nonprofit or have a fiscal sponsor with this status. Programs must also serve clients within a 30-mile radius of Waterloo to be considered for a grant. To access the grant application and learn more about the process, criteria, and focus areas, visit their website or contact Reyes Rodriguez at 319-235-6211, extension 18. Cedar Valley United Way recognizes the importance of investing in local initiatives that make a tangible impact on our community. Using data and community focus group feedback, it seeks to empower organizations and projects that share our vision for a stronger, more vibrant Cedar Valley. United Way believes in the power of community-driven solutions, and this grant opportunity is a testament to our commitment to supporting those who work tirelessly to address pressing needs and create positive change. Organizations that share a passion for community development are encouraged to take advantage of the opportunity. And now, listeners, we'd like to take a minute to remind you that you're listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Friday, December 1st on IRIS, I-R-I-S, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and the Print Handicapped. Now, this announcement.
If you're anxious about retirement, if you can't stop worrying about your aging parents' health, if you're depressed because you feel like you're losing everyone you love, turn to Your Life Iowa. Anxiety and depression are real illnesses. Let us connect you to someone who can help, because mental health is health. Get the help you need to start feeling better at yourlifeiowa.org. We're a free helpline where you can talk, text, or chat 24/7. Brought to you by Iowa HHS.
Now let's turn to the opinion section. Our first editorial comes from the Storm Lake Times Pilot, written by Art Cullen, titled "Into the Final Stretch of the Iowa Caucuses." Just rolled out from Thanksgiving stupor as Black Friday dawns, with the Iowa Republican caucuses rolling in like a stiff wind out of the Dakotas. Come January 15th, all the shouting should be over. The way it looks, Iowa Republicans are still all bound up in Donald Trump. Vivek Ramaswamy could have shot somebody on Lake Avenue last week, and hardly anybody would show up. He was the flavor of the week several weeks ago, until Nikki Haley ripped him to shreds in a debate. Iowans have met Ron DeSantis and don't like him much, except for Governor Kim Reynolds and Bob Vanderplaats, who endorsed him for reasons that ordinary people are not meant to understand. His poll numbers are backing down. His never-back-down pack just shoved its chief overboard. Trump is stomping on him and Reynolds. Trump jeers while the lessers pander to the evangelicals. Haley is garnering what momentum can be had among the second tier. The anybody-but-Trump money is flowing her way. She did Trump's bidding as UN ambassador. She was his hired help. But she does have youth, vigor, and a sharp enough edge to dispatch Tim Scott and Ramaswamy in the process of elimination. Chris Christie is not playing in Iowa, which means he is not playing. This time, Iowa probably determines the Republican nominee. And now, that looks like the man in the golden bouffant, which has the hyenas howling. How can this be? The media has failed. It must not have pointed out the January 6th insurrection, or the 91 criminal charges, or the jury finding that he was responsible for sexual assault, or that Trump pledges to round up the undocumented, put them in pens, too bad the Sioux City stockyards are gone, and arrest his political opponents. This must have not been reported 24/7 on cable TV. Still others pray that Joe Biden will make an Irish exit, quiet, like through the side door, before the final dirge plays. All signs say Trump, 77, is leading Biden, 81. Biden beat Trump before against the odds. Those who think he is feeble underestimate him. He just did a polar plunge to remind them. Kamala Harris or Gavin Newsom sound interesting in the abstract. Joe Biden is running for re-election, and more likely than not, he will win. The economy is turning in his favor. Perhaps he can tap the flames in the Middle East or Ukraine, makes a breakthrough. Biden has not made it this far by being Mrs. Biden's dim son. Trump, meanwhile, belongs in the psychologist's handbook for self-destructive behavior. they are likely to be our choices a year from now. Where does that leave rentals? In the cold. Bob Vanderplatz had his 15 minutes of fame when he ran off three Iowa Supreme Court justices for legalizing gay marriage. What happens when the money well runs dry? DeSantis better win Iowa or get closer than 15 points to the former president come criminal defendant. This will be the final push. Storm Lake has not seen that many candidates. Too many Mexicans here getting along with Anglos. Not a good look when you would rather pin them up. We have started to see a little more traffic, like the dashing ex-fighter pilot who says he thinks he can beat Trump when sows sprout wings. Iowa could change the trajectory. We could learn to our surprise that Kim Reynolds does have a mojo and that it is transferable to the caricature of a rat. When you look at DeSantis, you think rodent in big boots. Problem is, voters in recent city and school elections rejected the Reynolds-DeSantis cultural wedge song and dance. They may have enough appeal to deny Haley the ability to get close enough to Trump to inflict damage in Iowa. If Trump prevails by 20 percentage points or better, Christie will not slow him down in New Hampshire. Then, not even former Governor Haley is likely to stand in Trump's way in South Carolina. A barometer to determine how serious they are will be how much time the second tier spends barnstorming Northwest Iowa, the reddest place in America. Not enough yet, for sure, because they were loving up Trump bigly in Fort Dodge while he talked about the authoritarian standard writ new in the U.S. of A. We all heard him, you bet. Still, Iowa is likely to anoint him in a matter of weeks. Now, that is something to think about, especially if you are Kim Reynolds. Remember them chanting, "Lock her up"? Next from the Des Moines Register, Iowa abortion rules would traumatize victims and worsen doctors' care. This editorial written by Dr. Emily Bovers, Dr. Andrea Greiner, Dr. Jamie Maxson, and Dr. Francesca Turner. The editorial is also signed by other Iowa physicians. As physicians caring for patients in Iowa, we are gravely concerned about the Iowa Board of Medicine proposed rule 653-13.17 to administer House File 732, the six-week abortion ban recently passed in the special session of the Iowa legislature and temporarily blocked by a district court. Proposed Rule 653-1317 puts physicians in the position of interpreting complex legal scenarios and prevents us from providing the highest standard of patient care. This rule states that physicians must not only interpret the legal statutes regarding rape and incest, but also asks for facts surrounding the timing of events, such as the occurrence, the reporting, the individual responsible, and their familiar relationship to the patient. None of this information is necessary to provide medical care and abortion. The attending physician, quote, may require the women seeking the abortion to sign a certification form attesting that the information she gave was true and accurate to the best of her understanding, unquote. This certification is unethical, hostile, and not required in any other area of medicine. These interactions will undermine the trust necessary for quality medical care. Furthermore, these mandates force victims of sexual assault to recount painful details of abuse, exacerbating traumatic experiences. The final section of this rule, labeled 13.17.5, discipline, does not give any specifics about what disciplinary procedures, if any, would be carried out against a physician who performs an abortion that violates these rules, or HF 732. We would argue no discipline should be meted out. The lack of detail in this section imposes a heavy burden on obstetrician gynecologists in Iowa, already a scarce group. Iowa ranks 50 out of 50 for the number of obstetrician gynecologists per woman of childbearing age. These physicians face a vague threat of discipline, which may derail a career spanning decades, remove a trusted physician from the care of hundreds of other patients, and further compromise an already scarce medical workforce. Physicians in Iowa seek to provide empathetic and personalized care for their patients, not to jeopardize the patient-physician relationship by demanding horrifying details. Physicians in Iowa seek to promote positive health outcomes and justice, not to withhold care while waiting for our patients to fully miscarry or for their health to decline enough to qualify for treatment or result in their death. The population of Iowa deserves better than arbitrary rules that do not promote the health and well-being of pregnant patients. As the Board of Medicine considers how to best apply the rules to implement House File 732, we implore the members to protect the practice of medicine, to advocate for the physician-patient relationship, and reject mandates for non-medical questioning in the exam room. This proposal neither enhances patient safety nor improves the practice of medicine. Next, we have an editorial from Art Cullen of the Storm Lake Times Pilot. The title is, What Surplus? And it opens up with a photograph of Governor Kim Reynolds speaking at a podium at the Family Leadership Summit in Des Moines in July. On top of the $2 billion in tax cuts approved last legislative session, Governor Kim Reynolds is preparing another big round of tax reductions. She advocates eliminating the state income tax with significant legislative support. Heading into an election, the Republicans are bound to go for broke. Reynolds will need to shore up support with her base after alienating Donald Trump. Meanwhile, it comes to our attention from our reporter, Kate Keeley, that the state is unloading tons of state property under the control of the Department of Human Services, including 100 acres of the oak-lined campus of the Mental Health Institute in Cherokee. Many people who, for generations, have regarded it as sort of a state park, are worked into a lather over the proposal to sell off part of the campus to develop housing. We feel sorry for the superintendent who had to take local fire during a meeting last week. You might want to roll the dice on developing family homes next to the state sex offenders unit. If it's trees you're after, the Little Sioux River Valley should suffice. It doesn't cost the state much to keep the campus, just for the mowing. But selling off land is a quick way to make the state's books look better, to rationalize more tax cuts to win votes. The state will never get that land back once it sells. It also was noted last week that Iowa ranks 49th for nursing home inspectors. The nursing homes at Newell and Albert City closed under miserly Medicaid reimbursement imposed by Reynolds. Northwest Iowa is notorious for its lack of mental health services, Cherokee notwithstanding. Storm Lake is without a strings teacher because its music program is underfunded. It's not as if the English or science programs were overfunded. It's a money issue. If we had money, we would have a strings teacher. The state quit spending money on Storm Lake Marina over a period of years and allowed it to fall into disrepair. It is not helping the city solve its water infrastructure problems because there is not enough money. Drake University last week announced program reductions. Upper Iowa is on thin ice, and Iowa Wesleyan closed, while the Iowa Tuition Grant Program languishes. Alta Aurelia can't get bus drivers. It's a money issue, too. Iowa doesn't really have a $1.83 billion surplus when you can't afford an Iowa Wesleyan or a strings teacher at Storm Lake, or to make certain that Granny is safe, or that she has a place at all. We have huge deficits in this state that go wanting every year. We're selling off our assets, underfunding education, and throwing elder care into a cold northwesterly. In another year, you will scarcely remember your tax cut. Who knows which Iowa college will close by then? Next, winter sets in. We didn't dream of a white Thanksgiving weekend, but we got one. The lake looked foreboding as the snow fell. It officially locked us down for the winter, not going anywhere near I-35 and I-80, or taking off the Long Johns until Memorial Day. We are committed to the primary Iowa pastimes of eating while watching TV and basketball. Downtown Storm Lake looks festive. Wouldn't you know that the Sugar Bowl ladies have birthdays during the holiday shopping season? They could advise Taylor Swift on marketing. It should be a good year. The crops were good. Prices have been worse. Land is going like gangbusters still. Lake Avenue has been full. We head into Jim's to find the next Caitlin Clark in the making. The Iowa women are a national sensation. Don't overlook Newell Fonda nemesis Audie Crooks from Algona, who made a splash last weekend with a 23-point barrage for Iowa State. And be sure to watch Tucker DeVries of Drake, the son of the coach Darian DeVries, Applington native and UNI Panther, who is the best basketball player in America nobody has heard of. For those who prefer the fresh air, ice fishing will begin soon enough. We do these things to distract ourselves while the legislature is in session doing inadvisable things from January to April, and local governments do the grisly work of setting budgets and property taxes. 'Tis the season. We make the best of it. We will tune in to spring training and see the green outfields and fantasize. We will make some chili. You can often find Drake on Mediacom Channel 22. Sieben's Fieldhouse is a hop and a skip if you watch your step. Meet you in Omaha? Not until the College World Series. Now from the New York Times, the window to meaningfully support separated immigrant families is closing. This is a guest editorial by Kelly Albanac Cribbs, who is a lawyer who served as the federally appointed child advocate for separated immigrant children in 2018. Last month, the federal government announced a proposed settlement agreement in the class action lawsuit brought by the American Civil Liberties Union on behalf of immigrant parents who were wrongfully separated from their children at the border under the Trump administration's zero-tolerance policy. On December 8th, a federal court will hold a hearing and consider whether it should grant final approval of the settlement. If approved, the settlement would provide families with some temporary benefits, such as work authorization, short-term housing, medical assistance, including behavioral health sciences. It would also provide them with an opportunity to apply for permanent immigration status through the asylum system. While it will not provide a lawyer to represent them, it will offer immigration legal services like a help desk or offer counseling, help complete forms, and make referrals to attorneys who might take a case pro bono. And for the next 8 years, it would bar separation in most instances where families are apprehended at the border. But as a whole, the proposed settlement falls far short of our government's moral obligation to meaningfully redress the harm it inflicted on more than 5,000 children and their parents. The government's short-term and impermanent relief denies families the stability and support they deserve as they piece their lives back together. Instead, the federal government should, and can still, provide separated families with permanent immigration status, monetary damages, and accountability for the harm they continue to endure. Justice for separated families must include permanent immigration status in this country so that families can focus on rebuilding their lives without the looming fear of deportation to dangerous circumstances. For the thousands of families that have been reunited to date, their familial chemistry has been forever altered by the trauma of an abrupt forced separation, the process of repairing ruptured bonds between parent and child will require time, effort, and supportive services. Many parents were deported while their children remained in the United States, often raised by family members. Now, as the Biden administration works to bring deported parents back, they are returning to children who have adjusted to English-speaking schools, built bonds with different caregivers, and acclimated to an American lifestyle. In some cases, these differences have prevented parents from resuming their role as their child's primary caregiver. While reunification can bring joy, parents cannot escape the heartbreak of the years they lost with their children. One mother, struck by her son's newfound facial hair, told me that the government took her boy from her and returned to her a man. While the government's proposed settlement offers temporary status and a new opportunity to file for asylum, it will not provide them with legal representation. In other words, reunifying families will still have to navigate the complexities of asylum law on their own before a federal agency that, in fiscal year 2022, granted only 22% of the asylum claims it heard. The government could and should also monetarily compensate families. No parents I know would trade years of family memories or their children's health for a dollar amount, but at least it would be a partial admission of government responsibility for these horrors. The money could also offer a practical source of support to the families that are struggling to make financial ends meet while navigating the aftermath of family separation. For many families, that includes long-term effects of trauma. In 2018, child health experts were quick to criticize the family separation policy because of the undeniable negative impact on children's mental health and long-term development. I worked with an 11-year-old separated child who was reunified with his father in July of 2018 after 4 months. Even now, the child wakes up in the middle of the night in a panic. Their family is, in his father's words, forever marked. In December 2021, after months of talks, the Biden administration withdrew from negotiation which would have offered compensation to thousands of families forcibly separated under the policy. Cases have continued to be litigated by individual families, but the Justice Department continues to fight these legal claims tooth and nail, and has even defended the Trump administration's actions in court filings in most of those cases. The family separation policy was intentionally designed to inflict harm on children. It is a profound stain on our nation's history, and yet no one responsible for implementing this policy has been held accountable in any public way. It is not too late to get this right. Congress should step in to create permanent immigration status for separated parents and children, or at a minimum, to allocate funds to provide full legal representation for every separated family that applies for asylum under the settlement. The Biden administration must stop defending in a court a policy it publicly denounces and return to settlement negotiations in the monetary damages lawsuits. And for those of us who were incensed by family separation 5 years ago, we must continue to demand that our government officials offer more significant recompense and accountability for these families. Until that happens, our failure to meaningfully redress the harms of family separation will remain almost as shameful as the original policy itself. Now, in college women's volleyball, UNI falls in 4 sets to Miami, caps season in NCAA first round. Story written by Ethan Petrick. Dateline, Madison, Wisconsin. Northern Iowa's 21-match win streak came to a close, as did the Panthers' season, with a 4-set loss to Miami, Florida, 25-23, 25-19, 20-25, and 25-20 on Thursday night. UNI senior Kalissa Andorfer said the Panthers' season of success did not lessen the sting of Thursday night's loss. Quote, "Our goal was, we really wanted to make it to the Sweet 16," Andorfer said. "I know making it to the tournament is such a big deal in and of itself. Even having the opportunity to be here was great. But we really had high expectations for ourselves. So, to fall short of that, it's going to hurt. It's going to sting. I think for the girls that are coming back next year, that is going to be a really good motivator," unquote. UNI struggled to find a rhythm offensively, hitting just .188 for the match and only hitting above 200 in one set. Miami relied on powerful serves, forcing UNI out of system, and a 30-kill performance from freshman Grace Lopez to advance to the round of 32. Quote, "It was tough," Peterson said. "I felt like there was a combination of things with the hitting percentages in the first two sets. I did not think we were doing a great job of bettering the ball and getting our hitters in the best positions. We just were not transitioning well, getting great swings out of that," unquote. And now, friends, that's going to do it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for December 1st. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Remember, you can access a recording of today's reading of the Courier or of the other newspapers around the state that we read. Just go to our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And we want to thank you for listening to your IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.